All right, away we go. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin once again here with Dom. Dom, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We are back again to preview the finale, already the finale of Survivor Ghost Island, Dom. I know for a lot of people at this point, it feels like it's probably been a very long season, or at least a long last few weeks or so. But I would say, at least from where I've been sitting, that as always, this season has flown by for me.
It's been a bit of an arduous march to the finish line over the past few weeks, but yeah, it doesn't feel like that long ago that we were talking about like Dom versus Chris Noble and all of this pre-merge stuff and eulogizing five or six different pre-merge people in a row. So the time has flown by. I'm not sure where it's gone or if I've really done anything productive with it. So I'm guessing the answer is no there.
Yeah. All right. Well, still plenty to be getting into before we see how all of this wraps up on Wednesday night. But before we do that, Dom, a couple of things that we want to flag up. First of all, you just did a podcast with Australian King Adam Ritta about everything that's been going on Survivor, a little bit about Survivor on CBS, like Ghost Island, but various other forms of Survivor that are currently playing out that I know regular listeners will have heard us talk about in passing before, but this is our first deep dive, and really Dom's first deep dive, because I was not involved in this, but Dom, tell people a little about that, because that's been recorded, and actually is already out now, as of this afternoon.
Yeah. You were there in spirit. So the main focus of that was Survivor South Africa, which is very much still living up to the hype. Would strongly encourage anyone listening, if you haven't checked it out already, to make the time for that and to get in touch with us if you're curious about how. That season is getting off to an amazing start so far. And I think this is the first, as far as I know, the first like actual coverage of it that I've seen so far. So I definitely want to see more about that out there, because it is definitely deserving of it. But we also took a quick tour around various other parts of the world that happen to be hosting their own various versions of Survivor at the moment, from New Zealand to America, I guess, and Ghost Island, all the way to the great state of Maryland, where Austin Sharp is still doing some good work there.
Yeah. So definitely very excited about all of the non-CBS Survivor that's going on right now, and I'm sure plenty more will be coming down the line on all of these various franchises, I would suspect, in some form or another. So Don, the only other thing that I have, unless you have anything more that we need to flag up in the way of extra podcasts, so Dom's giving me a look, so I'm going to throw it back over to Dom.
Well, I was just going to say that I imagine we will, or I at least, maybe you can join me for some of it, but we will be touching on all of those in some capacity over the course of their runs. I imagine that's going to be easier now that Ghost Island is wrapping up. We're in the official CBS off-season soon. So we do plan on doing that. There is, as I said with Adam, there is enough Survivor out there now that it's too hard to keep track of all of it, which is a great problem to have. But we will check in, I think, every few weeks with all of those just to make sure we're keeping abreast of all of the developments there.
All right, excellent. And then the other thing that we're going to be doing, Dom, coming very soon, actually, we are one episode away, which I think we're going to be recording tomorrow, from wrapping up our Big Brother 10 coverage and then diving into our next patron series. That's all been going on over at patreon.com/Dom and Colin. If you want to join us for these bonus episodes coming this off season and help determine what season that's going to be, that would be the place to go. Again, patreon.com/Dom and Colin. And along those lines, it's looking like it's going to be one of Heroes versus Villains or Token Sheen. So if you want to make your vote count, those would be the two to be choosing between at this point, it looks like. So there you go. I'm very excited for whatever that ends up being. Dom, anything else you want to bring up before we dive into Ghost Island?
I think that covers everything. As always, if you have any information, feedback, questions, or really anything else for us, then get in touch via the usual channels, whether it's Twitter or email, domandcolin@gmail.com. But as I think you highlighted, I wasn't really paying attention, so I'm not quite sure. We are just going to be diving into the edit zone straight away here.
Did not highlight that. Told you that off air before we came on, but now you highlight that.
Well, it's on the note, so I couldn't help but get into it. Basically, what we decided here was that so much of the analysis at this point is intertwined with the edit, and it's so hard to separate them that we are just going to treat them as one entity. And we're not going to be focusing too much on the edit. We're going to save that towards the end, but we will be referencing it from time to time. And then also, there's really not that much to say unless you want to hear us just bag on Laurel like everyone else. We can be the 45th people to say that, oh, I think maybe Laurel should have turned on Dom and Wendell this week. and I imagine there'll be some of that in due time, but There's really not that much to say other than to wrap everything up and tie up all these loose ends before we get to the finale here.
Right, totally. And so yeah, this is something we've done in the past, the episode before the finale, just have the edit zone be the entire episode. So I guess let's officially play the edit zone bumper to make the official checkpoint for where all of the edit takes are going to start to become totally fair game. But as Dom referenced, I have basically no confidence in any of my reads on like how this will actually play out. Like the spoiler alert, like the extent of my analysis by the end is not going to be a whole lot different than more or less flip a coin between Dom and Wendell, as has been the case for a little while. But here we go with the latest episode of Ghost Island right after the edit zone bumper, which apparently was not in last week's episode, but we will play it for you right now. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken.
Brad Culpepper.
Ben.
Chrissy.
Stephanie Gonzalez.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Tune out now.
Okay, here we go now, Dom. And so, as you said, it's not like this whole discussion is going to be centered around the edit. I just want to make sure everyone is aware that that's going to be probably more of a factor in our earlier conversation, just as we are previewing what appears to be a pretty clear two-horse race going into the finale here. But, Dom, where do you want to dive into the latest episode that we saw? Dive in by unmuting your mic. All right, dive in by really unmuting your mic now, because it is still muted, and hopefully we can just edit this out anytime you're ready. Unmute your mic.
Can you or anybody else hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. The answer that I'm building towards over that long period of silence is, I don't know. I'm not sure where we can really dive into this, because there's not that much to dive into. We're going to dive into the shallow end, hit our heads, and be none the wiser for all of it. So,
okay, can I make a recommendation? Now, let's get the Laurel obviously should have turned against Dom and Wendell vote, like that whole conversation out of the way. And this is a conversation we had last week. You know, that was a very popular conversation all over the place last week. And when we discussed it, I think we at least tried to give Laurel some benefit of the doubt in terms of what she may have been thinking. And maybe if we come in here next episode and see her say, okay, I deliberately held off last week, but now is going to be my chance to make a move, and she just can't get through the idols, then that would be a totally different story. And we would have a lot easier time understanding standing pat at Final Eight. But again, this week we come in and basically hear Laurel almost literally say, I know I can't beat these guys, and this is my last chance. But the problem is, I really like them. They're two of my best friends out here. What is your current stance on that whole situation? What bears a deeper dive this week?
I naively thought there was a chance that Laurel actually would try to make the move this week, and it was going to be Sebastian's extra vote that he found that was going to screw everything up, and we were going to be having to dissect all of that this week. Not sure why I ever deluded myself into thinking that, but I guess you cling to any glimmer of hope when the season is this predictable or on this kind of track. Like we were saying this time last week that seemed like the time to make the move, if no other reason than if you don't make it then, you're not going to get another chance, probably. And especially with Sebastian being the limpet or the barnacle, or with them being the remora to Sebastian's fish, or whatever that metaphor was meant to imply there, it feels like he is solidly in with them. And it seemed like despite her voting for Wendell a few weeks ago, Angela now seems to be solidly in the Dom and Wendell camp too. So maybe the conclusion after all this time is, this was never actually going to work. There was never going to be a chance to make this move. If anything, the missed opportunity was two or three votes even earlier. And this is Laurel just trying to cement her spot in the finals and jump up a few rungs on the pay ladder.
Right. One of the things we saw a few times this week was Donathan just frustrated yet again with he's putting most of the blame in the episode on Laurel for not being willing to make this move. But it does seem like you're right, that Sebastian and Angela may also have been totally unwilling to ever have turned on Dom and Wendell. And we saw later in the episode, I thought it was funny that Donathan tries to get Wendell and Dom more concerned about each other. Like he's telling Wendell, hey, you know, if you wind up in the finals with Dom, he's going to be the one who ends up getting my vote. And frankly, like in Donathan's shoes, maybe he thought to himself, well, Jesus, man, if none of these other people are willing to turn on these two, maybe my best bet really is just getting them to somehow turn on each other.
And I didn't know if Jonathan would ever be willing to turn on Laurel. And if so, that would be one of the biggest events of the season by itself. And it feels like now he hasn't turned on her directly. He's not agitating to get her voted out. And part of that is, at this point, you have to vote out Dom and Wendell because the time is running out. Even if you wanted to vote out Laurel, that she would be so far down your list of priorities that you couldn't even make that happen. But I think we are seeing this parting of the ways where he is just getting so frustrated by her being so unwilling to make this move that he has to go rogue and do it himself. And as he's realizing, the numbers just aren't there. If Laurel's sticking with them, if Sebastian's sticking with them, there's really nothing that he has to work with unless there's some other twist like Kellen's extra vote, which really would be coming in handy this week if she still had it. But someone can pull out of that bag of tricks.
Yeah, that actually ties into something that we brought up last week that Laurel, we were talking a bit about just kind of the message that I think most people will probably come away with from these last few episodes and perhaps Laurel's, like the intent the editors are having in Laurel's overall story arc of the way I described it last week being like the reverse Sierra Easton, where Laurel is going to be the poster child for not making big moves, and the editors are making us aware of this. What's the term I'm looking for? Like the example that what the hell am I looking for?
I can't give you the word if I don't know the concept you're trying to express with that.
She is the portrait of
the cautionary tale.
Thank you. There you go. Thank you. Caution. Thank you. That's what it was. The cautionary tale of how not to go out there and play Survivor. And what we want is people who go out there and say, I'm going to go out here and make big moves. And what we're getting with Laurel is the editors showing, like, hammering us over the head with, hey, refusal to make big moves is what's going to cost you in the end. And to tie it back into what you were just saying, I actually would say if we are in a circumstance where Donathan is a juror and Laurel is in the finals, I'm getting to the point where I think I would actually be surprised if he voted for her.
I think he's going to follow through on his promise this episode and vote for Dom against Wendell and probably Laurel as well.
So you think they're going to be there together? You think it's going to be Dom against Wendell?
I'm starting to think that. I was going to say at least two of them are going to be. I don't feel like that's a hot take by any means. I feel like that's the baseline expectation at this point.
Somewhere between two and three of them will be in the finals.
I think it is getting more and more likely that it is going to be just, I guess, a clash of the titans, if you want to frame it that way. But it is interesting that we've been saying for the last few weeks that if Dom and Wendell and Laurel and Jonathan make it there together as a foursome, this would be one of our favorite final fours or just favorite groups heading into the finale of all time, maybe. And maybe now people are starting to qualify that by saying that's only true, or that can only be true if Laurel and Jonathan are making moves against them and cementing their own reputations as players. But if that's the case, then they're not getting there together as a foursome in the first place. So it's like this idea of them together is great, but the reality of it can't ever come together unless Laurel and Jonathan are just underperforming what you would hope from them.
So to me, that means obviously, if they're not all there at the Final Four, Dom, I hope you can follow this logic. One of them, thus, must have left before the Final Four. And so someone, whether it's Sebastian or Angela, would still be in there at the Final Four, at which point someone's either going to win fire, lose fire, win immunity, and be brought. And as far as I've been concerned all season, I had been writing off everyone other than the big four along with Kellen as being even capable of filling those four spots. Which of Sebastian or Angela do you think is more of a front runner to sneak into that final four? Because to me, I still am having a hard time seeing either of them in any of those four kind of major spots in the end game.
I honestly have no idea. And I am thinking at this point, it is just going to be the four of them plus one and maybe Dom and Wendell take a shot at Laurel and Jonathan at Final Five, but then if there really is this big split between the two of them and Jonathan is going off doing his own thing, maybe they're not such a tight pair that you even have to worry about that anymore. Maybe you can just vote Jonathan out whenever you want, or maybe even vote Laurel out and play it from there.
Yeah. I guess what I'm driving at is, while it does seem clear to me that we are going to be looking at Dom or Wendell coming away as the winner on Wednesday night, I still, while I would be weighting more the early boots towards the Sebastian and Angela's, I still think it's very possible that one of the five of them does somehow end up making it there. Because one thing that over the course of these last many seasons, while I do think we've been good at pretty quickly sniffing out who the major players of the season are generally going to be, I don't think I've ever been even close to picking out how a finale would ultimately play out. I guess Millennials versus Gen X, we were pretty close to the boot order, but obviously I was on Ken instead of Adam.
Yeah. You had Adam getting a solid 6 or 7 fewer jury votes than he actually got. But coming into this week, you were convinced that Kellen was going to be there in the finale. I said to you last week, I thought surely Kellen is the most likely boot coming out of this final seven. You dismissed that. Now that she's gone, does that force you to recalibrate your other predictions at all, or are you just shuffling some of the numbers around at the bottom?
To quickly clarify, by I dismissed that, you mean I, for the first time all season, said I am finally seeing the timeline where Kellen is not in the finals. But I was saying I still think Kellen will be virtually a lock in my mind to at least make the finale. And for that reason, actually, this episode really did surprise me. And frankly, this is something I wanted to get into and we'll get more into when we talk about just parting thoughts on Kellen and her edit. But I'm very optimistic because what I love going into these finales is just being wrong. Like, what I root for when I'm watching any episode of this show is for the editors to just do it to me, to like blow my mind the same way that, like, that's what got me so hooked on The Genius, is their ability to do that, to set me up with one set of expectations and then completely pull the rug out from under me. And I do think that in the finales, generally speaking, recently, they've done a decent job of that.
Quickly, to clarify your clarification, you said you thought that Kellen would be in the finale, and we had to debate how loose we were willing to define that, because when we thought it was going to be five people, that was a hot take. That was a bold call that you could be held to. When it's six, that gives you a lot more leeway, and you didn't even get that. Despite having that extra room to work with, Kellen is still not going to be in the finale. So I feel like chalking that up as any kind of victory is even more just blatant, shameless revisionism.
To clarify the clarification of the initial clarification, I always thought it would be six people making the finale, and thus I was expanding my range to six instead of five. There was a time where I said I could see these five being the exact final five, but you are right that I am not trying to even begin to claim that I was on to Kellen over the course of this season. As you've brought up earlier, up until last week, I had Kellen more or less just penned in as either the winner or the compelling losing finalist since literally the premiere. And the other person from the premiere who jumped off the page at me was Stephanie Johnson, and we saw how that went too. And that's why I just said I'm very optimistic about the edit going forward. I know this was not a remotely balanced season character-wise, but I do think a lot of that had to do with just the way the boot order ended up playing out and the kind of control Dom and Wendell had on the whole game. And I would love it if the Stephanie Johnson and Kellen edits continue, where we get these two people who end up being the fourth one out and the eventual seventh place finisher are the big characters through the first 3 weeks. I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think it'd be great.
So as of right now, do you have the four of them of this big four being the final four? Do you think it is going to come down to, as so many people predicted way back when, this is going to be the ultimate like group that defines the season?
As of right now, I think I would lean yes, that is the group. But that's, again, going back to, just in my mind, those last four spots in a season where you have this fire challenge are pretty big deals to me. And I have a hard time piecing together no one ever turning on Dom and Wendell, and also Laurel is a losing finalist, and also Donathan is there at the fire challenge with anything other than that combination being there. But if there was one spot that could be filled by someone else, I could see the person who gets taken to the finals by the final immunity challenge winner being either one of Sebastian or Angela.
See, I was going to say, I could see one of the two of them being that final four boot who loses in fire, because working on the same kind of theory as someone who gets idled out, someone who draws rocks, they don't want to give them a great edit because they don't want it to feel like they were taken out unfairly. When you have this final four twist that people are still getting accustomed to, then maybe it would make sense if the ultimate victim of that was Angela or Seabass, as strange as that sounds.
I mean, did you watch last season? You don't. I mean, Devin didn't get a good edit.
Where Devin for the entire pre-merge basically got a non-existent edit, and after the merge they showed him because they had to, because he was a compelling character and player and was very influential. Contrast that with Angela or Seabass, who they have no compunction at all about running out of the show as if they didn't exist. Like, that it would be very anticlimactic if it's just like Angela struggling to even get the matches out of her box while Dom has already built his fire or whatever. But that, if that's what ends up happening, that would make sense to me.
Okay. As I was saying earlier, the finale has, at least for the last few seasons, been consistent enough at surprising me that I'm certainly leaving the door open for like any permutation of Boots other than someone other than like Dom, you know, other than Dom and Wendell are both not there in the finals.
Yeah, but returning to this Laurel question quickly, the difficulty I think is reconciling the things that she says she knows about the game and her plans for it with her actions, right? Because she's standing pat, she's not making the move, and yet every single episode we have these confessionals of her saying, I know that they're unbeatable in the end, I need to make the move, and I'm going to do it soon. And trying to make that consistent and reconcile those is the ultimate challenge this season. I'm starting to think it's impossible unless you assume some part of it is misdirection. So what if Laurel maybe long ago has decided this is what I'm taking my chances with, I'm going to the final three with these guys, but she knows as a longtime fan of the show, if I want to get airtime and if I want to give the editors material that they can use to keep the episodes interesting and get myself a place in that, I need to give them what they want. I need to give them this hook of, well, maybe this is a time when finally I'm going to mix things up. And in a way, that's almost more insulting than not making the move in the eyes of many people, because it's like you're actively trying to deceive the audience. But it would be, I think, more consistent than just, I guess, chickening out of the move every single time, which is the other interpretation that people are attacking her for.
So you're theorizing that there could be some, I believe it was Nicole Franzel in BB18 took a lot of heat for this, like she would fake entire conversations just to give them something to use on TV to make it look suspenseful. Is that essentially what you're saying maybe in play?
Basically, yeah. The only other thing I can think of is there was a secret scene this week of either Kellen or Angela, I can't remember quite who, saying that they think that Seabass is a big threat, which, again, unclear how reliable that narration is if it's coming from, especially Angela. But it seems like if he is seen as this just likable provider who hasn't had to betray anyone or vote out anyone, he's making these goofy jokes and he's got Jenna on the jury who likes him and he was close with the other Malolos, you can see why people would trick themselves into thinking maybe Seabass is a jury threat. And in that same vein, every season there's one person who doesn't really get given any justice by the edit, but who it turns out, based on all of the post-game stuff, definitely would have won if they made it to the end, or so people claim, because everyone loves them and so on and so forth. So if Sebastian and or Angela are those people, or even Chelsea going back a few weeks, then maybe Laura thinks that she is basically drawing dead, and yet she does have a reliable path to the end with Dom and Wendell. So why not at least take that reliable path, be able to hone your arguments now with that predictability in mind, as opposed to jeopardizing your seat in the final three for an outcome that isn't even any better for you. Now, again, based on what we've seen, I don't think that's true, but maybe we're kind of casting around for explanations for how any of this could make sense, and that might be one of them.
Right. Laurel, as she's heading into tribal council this week, or at some point in a confessional this week, lays out, my options are essentially make the big move, or, as she puts it, make the smart move. And I think most people hear, when she says that, make the safe move, but it's interesting to me that she says make the smart move, and I think that would potentially lend some kind of credence to your idea that maybe she thought this was a much more uphill battle than it appears to be on TV. Like, maybe she is a lot more worried about Sebastian and Angela as jury threats, or maybe even Donathan too, and she does feel like, okay, at the end of the day, if all of these people are going to be relatively equal to beat, but this path is far more likely, or equally hard to beat, but this path is going to be far more likely to actually get me to the end, I'm going to go for that. I think actually similarly, Spencer may have faced something like that in Cambodia, where he recognized at a certain point, like, obviously Jeremy is not my dream finals opponent, but this is the way that I'm going to get there the most often. And then Jeremy won final immunity in a spot where Jeremy probably would have made it anyway. But I do think that's possible from Laurel's perspective here, for sure.
And if that's the case, I think you have to go back even further to the discussions that the fan base was having at final 11, final 10 of, you maybe have a shot at Dom and Wendell now, and it becomes, with so many votes left, it's much harder to figure out your path at the end. But maybe this is a time you have to take your shot, keep the Libbies and the Jenners and so on in the game, and maybe try and go with them. Like, if you genuinely think you can't beat any of the Navizi people, then this is your only chance to not have to go with the Navizi people, as risky as it might seem.
One of the very telling things for me at the end of this season, assuming Laurel is willing to talk to people about the way the season went down for her, we'll be hearing her point of view on what she would have potentially done differently, knowing what she knows now.
And honestly, given the reception that she's had over the past few weeks, I would not fault her at all for saying, I'm not talking to any of you, go fuck yourselves. I'm just doing my own thing and removing myself from the community altogether. But if she is willing to talk, I think that is going to be the first question on a lot of people's lips of, like, why this level of caution and or certainty? Because it kind of goes both ways, right? Either you're so scared of making the move because of these unknown variables, or you're so certain this is the right path that you don't see a reason to deviate from it. So it's kind of on either end, and we don't know which one it is yet.
The thing for me about all this whole situation is, I mean, just watching Laurel, and even not knowing she was a super fan, I feel like I would still come away with this conclusion of, Laurel is certainly thinking about what she's doing when she's out here playing the game. And I'm sure in the moment she had plenty of reasons for every single move that she ended up making. And, 18 seasons ago, Dom, a lot of people probably came away from Token Gene seeing, okay, this Yale alum drags along a guy who's goes to the end with this guy who's obviously going to beat him because that's his friend. And then we hear from Steven after the fact, and obviously there's way more to the story than that. And I think that could also certainly be in play with Laurel as well.
What if, so there's another timeline maybe, what if you think that you can beat Donald Wendell, that you actually are the biggest jury threat, and you just need to get as secure a path as you can to get to the end? And on that basis, maybe Dom is looking to cut you if he perceives the same thing, but Wendell, as far as I can tell, genuinely wants to go to the end with the people that he likes and trusts the most. I don't think he's going to be as willing to cut Dom and or Laurel as either of them would be to cut him, at least based on what they say. So if that's the case, why not take what you think is a guaranteed path to the finals with people that you have been working with the whole time?
Especially if you think you can beat them. But the thing is, we've heard her say in the last couple of weeks that it's presented on the show as her saying straight up, no bones about it, I cannot beat these two guys in the end. However, when she's saying that, at least in this most recent episode, and I think it was the case the week before as well, they are like cutting away to nature shots. I'm sure Austin Trupp's radar was going off as she's giving all of her speeches about her situation with Dom and Wendell. They're cutting away in spots where it seems like she could have just as easily been talking about anyone. Maybe she's saying, I know I can't beat them at the end, and she's talking about Angela and Sebastian. They're just piecing that in to make it seem like she's talking about Dom and Wendell.
And going back to what I said about separating what she's saying from what she's doing, maybe that's what you have to do here. Maybe she's locked in on this path, thinking that she has a good chance of beating them, and giving this uncertainty to the cameras because she knows that's what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So you could see yourself thinking that if Dom and Wendell, maybe like they're not going to get the credit for the moves they're making, or they're not liked enough that the jury's going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Meanwhile, you, as a former Malolo, you see all of these Malolos lined up on the jury who, if it is down these strong tribal lines, and Kellen has been doing her best the whole game to make it Navizi strong, Navizi versus Malolo, if you can scoop up all of those votes for yourself, then you start with an almost insurmountable advantage, and you only need maybe one or two Navizi votes to lock in a win. So if that's the case, then you can take that to the bank. Based on what we've seen, I don't think that's the case. I think she's not seen as a bona fide Malolo anymore. She's seen as like this almost a turncoat who went with the Navizi people, and it's going to be those Navizis who swung her to their side that are going to get the credit for that as far as it looks on TV.
Yeah, I could frankly see that going either direction in theory. Like, I think hypothetically, there's a lot of merit in the idea of being the one Malolo sitting next to two Navidi in the end. But you are right. The way that this is potentially going to come about for Laurel, where as the Malolos see it, maybe Laurel went from a Malolo who was in there with a chance to help turn things around for the Malolos to the Malolo who essentially clinched the game for the opposite team.
yeah, if you're the Malolo who went native and sided with the Navitis, you lose your Malolo colors, right? You shed any claim to those votes. Whereas you almost have to be the outsider for long enough and go on some like improbable underdog streak or whatever and make it to the end to retain that.
You have to be Bob Crowley. You want to be the Bob Crowley person who makes it to the end miraculously with all their friends on the jury.
So if Jenna had just woken up one day and just won 4 challenges in a row and made it to the end, I think she would reliably get like Libby and Michael and so on. But Laurel, as far as it stands at the moment, even if she wins the last few challenges, the jury's going to look at it and say, well, you kind of sold us out to get further yourself, and you never took a shot at the real power players, so you're kind of trapped in the middle. And that's almost the worst spot to be, because you now have no real unique argument you can make for yourself as to why you should win. Because it's like, I sided up for the power players, I had to cut you to do that, but then I never took the next step of going after those power players myself. So why even vote for you at that point?
Yeah, and I think, frankly, it ties back into what we brought up before, the idea of Laurel being like the poster child of not making big moves, that cautionary tale, that cautious tale of what goes wrong when you don't take the shot you know you need to take. I actually think these last few weeks in particular, Laurel is probably getting a less generous edit than she may even deserve, because I think they probably do, and with good reason, want to send that message to future players, and it's probably going to come at Laurel's expense when she's the one who probably was in the best position to change the outcome of this season had she been so inclined at a certain point. But I'm sure, Dom, much more on Laurel along the way. Let's go a couple other things that we want to roll through from this episode. I guess let's hit the reward challenge, which was played in pairs. This was the one where they were dropping spools down the beams and had to space them out and run up and down. And the winners got to deliver school supplies to local Fijian kids. Dominic on the show and Wendell, as usual, end up working closely together here and seemingly pulling it off without much effort. What did you think of this reward challenge? Did you have any like hacks for this game or anything like that? Did you like it, or what was your thought here?
It's a fantastic challenge, by the way. I love the entire concept here. It looked great, and it's fun at home just watching every single rotation to see whose is about to drop. Can they get back in time? Can they coordinate effectively? It's great fun. I didn't have a hack for it, although I did. Stephen Fishback did get sassy at me, as he is wont to do, because his suggested hack was to like time the length it takes one spool to go through the entire cycle. Divide that by the number of spools and then use that as your timing for how to place them. And that's fine, but like, surely that's what people are just doing intuitively anyway when they kind of space them out evenly just visually by looking at it. And his response was, yeah, because you've got the acceleration that you have to take into account, and like mathematically it's more sound this way. But when you have your partner there as well, they need to be on exactly the same page as you, and just telling them, okay, it's exactly 4.7 seconds before the next spool, that doesn't help them at all. Like, it's much easier if you're both working on the same like visual medium to get it all done. And Stephen didn't like that, but Stephen has lots of views, and you gotta take those for what they're worth.
Yeah, I was wondering, because I like, again, obviously Stephen is someone who knows a great deal about playing good Survivor. But I saw that tweet from him as well. I was like, hey, gang, the key to this challenge is to divide the total time by the number of spools. And I did think to myself, like, as if there was any other strategy people would even attempt to employ. Obviously, that's what you do for this challenge.
I'm trying to imagine Sebastian doing the basic algebra required to divide the number, and it's just like his head would just explode there just in the moment. There's no way he could make it happen.
Actually, is there a better strategy to employ? Do you want to have both of you go up and down like at the same time for any reason? Like, don't space your spools out, put two together. I don't think it makes a huge difference. So, they take the same amount of time no matter what, and that way you're probably just more likely to run into each other. But I'm wondering if there is any merit to giving yourself a little more space in between them and putting them closer together when you're not going to get both of them, obviously. You and one other person are getting the two.
So the rule is, before one of them reaches the end of the conveyor or whatever, you need the next one to be at the top, right? So you can't like stack them and just do them three at a time or whatever. But I was thinking, what if both of you go on the same cycle? So instead of having one of you go back and forth and then one of you on the like the half-life of that cycle going back and forth, what if instead you go together? So I guess it's like, nah, actually, no, it wouldn't work, right?
Well, that's what I'm asking. That's what I'm saying is there any merit in having less space in between the two of you?
It becomes tough then to get one of them back up to the top before the next one's coming down, though, right? Because it's you need at least a gap of a few seconds to make it work.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, either way, you're responsible for your own spools at the same interval. It's just a matter of if they're on, as you put it, like the half-life, or if they're closer to in sync with you. I don't think it makes a huge difference. Either way, you're both doing the same number of laps, the same the spools are going to take the same amount of time to drop. I guess it's neither here nor there, and that's basically the point that we're berating Stephen Fishback for trying to make in the first place, is trying to outthink the most obvious challenge in the first, like, one of the more obvious challenges strategically. But Dom and Wendell win that one, so there you go. And again, we had a spot here where these teams were drafted, despite there being seven players, and Angela didn't get picked, and I was reminded of a tweet, I think it was from Shannon Gates a couple of weeks ago, that I brought up on the podcast about how it would be so good on Ghost Island seasons, if there are, you know, more of them after this, to have the person who doesn't get drafted automatically be the Ghost Island person. It would add a whole different dynamic to the draft, and yet again, another spot where it seems like that would be such an obvious thing to do, instead of Angela, no shot at reward, no shot at Ghost Island, go sit on the bench. I think it would be so much cooler if the person who doesn't get picked doesn't even go watch the challenge. They leave for Ghost Island on the boat right there or whatever.
Yeah, not a great week for Angela. So she doesn't even get drafted for this challenge. At the immunity, she can't even build her bridge properly. Some say she's still out there building that bridge to this day. And then no confessionals, as I understand it. And I guess she's in on the vote, but then she has to, like, turn to Wendell for guidance and then just buries her head in her hands when it doesn't go the exact way that she predicts. So not really a great week for Angela or for anyone else other than Dom or Wendell, which is becoming a recurring theme.
Well, as I tweeted and then deleted after about 90 seconds, I wanted no piece of this take after putting it out there. But I'll put it out there on the podcast. I actually think, Dom, if people, just to irritate anyone who's not already sufficiently mad at me this week, I really do believe what I'm about to say, which is I think Angela's playing a killer Sandra game this season. She is just hanging out, waiting to be told what to do. I don't give a shit who gets voted out. As long as it's not me, I'm happy to hang out. I hope I make it to the end. I'm going to have no say over who I'm in the end with, and hopefully I'm there against historically beatable competition.
I'm not even going to indulge that at this juncture. We can when I've had more time to prepare a rebuttal, a defense, we can get into the weeds there. But I'm not even going to honor you for now. You have done more than enough work this week getting people mad at you on Twitter. That there's no need to add fuel to that fire.
To me, this is literally the exact game plan that Sandra advocates for. But neither here nor there. I respect you not wanting to get into this. Still love Sandra as A+ character. Stan her to death, obviously.
And of course love Angela too. We're both Sandra's here, as far as I am still aware.
And Janelle, while we're at it, just to cover all the bases, make sure we're not offending anyone with too powerful of a fan base. All right, and Rachel Riley and all the Donatos, everyone. All right, so Dom. Off on Ghost Island, I guess let's get into that quickly. Sebastian is the one who gets sent to Ghost Island after Laurel gets brought along for the reward, and Donathan is not happy about either of those things happening, but he's off, you know, quite literally on an island by himself at this point as far as shaking the game up. So Sebastian on Ghost Island has even better chances than we've seen to this point. Sebastian gets a 3 out of 4 shot here at this week's advantage. He goes for it, of course, and it turns out he's going to get the same bonus vote that Kellen got earlier, that was originally the vote Sarah Lucina used to vote out Michaela in Game Changers. Did you like this, Dom, or was this too cute for you, having Ghost Island being something from this exact season?
I loved it, and not just because it means that Stephen Fishback doesn't get to see his advantage come back into play. So that's comic justice for adding me on Twitter. But I really like this idea of recycling a relic from the same season, because if the idea is iconic mistakes which will go down in Survivor history, if any of those from this season with those relics qualify, then yeah, I really like the closure, if you like, of bringing that in again and seeing if someone can hashtag reverse the curse, if you like. What is interesting, though, it does imply that these choices were not locked in fully beforehand. We went into this extensively in our pregame podcast about just how much of Ghost Island is or should be predetermined. And what this shows you is there is at least one spot where they are open to, like, if Kellen doesn't misplay this advantage, or if she holds on to it, or if she's still in the game at this point, they can't put that back in. So maybe that just becomes no game for you, see you next time. But maybe there is like a wild card where whichever advantage wasn't used to its full effect is going to be put back in at this stage.
Or maybe it's not breaking news at all that the entire time, as we've known all along, this was totally susceptible to them doing whatever the hell they wanted.
Look. We agree on that, but again, we don't need to rehash all of that. What do you think is in store for Ghost Island in the finale? Because we know from the preview there is going to be one more trip, and you have to imagine that's going to be the culmination of Ghost Island on the season. There is going to be some big thing waiting in store there. It's not going to be someone gets there, they ascend to the summit of Ghost Island, and it's no game for you, turn around, go home. Right? That would be a pretty weak way to end it. So I imagine some final advantage is entering the game. Do you have any thoughts as to what that might be? Because my first thought was maybe it's like an advantage in the final immunity, because we've seen that time and time again. That would make sense. But do you have any other or any better ideas?
I would suspect it's going to be an immunity challenge we've seen before, where someone will get an advantage in a challenge someone messed up. And maybe it'll be like stacking plates in China or whatever cost Lunch Lady Denise the game, something to that effect, where it is, I would guess, going to be some advantage in the final immunity challenge. Because I did notice, you're right, that there are several urns still, there are like urns still unsmashed at Ghost Island there. Although now that I'm thinking about it, the final immunity challenge, do we think they're going to send someone to Ghost Island with only four people left in the game? Because I would have thought that the last Ghost Island would happen with five people left in the game, just because that seems like a ton to try to fit into a finale. So maybe it's an advantage in the final five challenge.
So whatever you put it in, it's going to take up roughly the same amount of time, right? Either way, it's going to be this action-packed finale. You have final six, final five, final four, fire at final four, final tribal, and this Ghost Island visit, and whatever else they decide to pack in there. So,
right, which is why I'm saying it's not going to be at Final Four. There's already so much going on at Final Four that there's going to be one Ghost Island visit, and I think it's going to be at Final Six or Final Five.
Okay, so in that case, it would seem weird if it pertained to the Final Four then, if it's like two rounds in advance, you get an advantage. So maybe instead it's the legacy advantage at Final Six. This is the last time it can come into play, and you're guaranteed immunity then, but then there's no choice as to whether to play that. It's just automatic. So
I mean, going to Ghost Island is easier than winning the immunity challenge by the powers of 10. So that seems off the table to me.
But at this point, I guess they don't know exactly how many visits there are to Ghost Island left in the game. But you have to be leaping on any chance you get to go there, right? Because you have to think there's going to be some big final advantage that whoever is the lucky beneficiary or beneficiary to channel Chris Noble is going to get. You want to be that person. So if you can set it up so that, like, your friend wins the reward and gets to send you or vice versa, then that's perfect.
I mean, maybe it's possible that it will be at Final Five and they give someone an outright vote steal to open the door for at Final Five. If it's a 2-on-3 scenario, which I don't think it would be, but if one of those two gets sent to Ghost Island and can steal a vote, that will swing it so that the two have majority over the three. I could see that being something they would consider doing.
I can see them considering that and being very entertained at that prospect. So maybe that's in store. Maybe you've called it.
Yeah. And to go to Sebastian and his bonus vote that was once a vote steal that's now just a bonus vote, it dematured on Ghost Island. To me, I would have been so much more interested in talking through all the ways this could flip things around at the finale if it didn't feel like such a foregone conclusion that obviously this is not going to be played to any meaningful impact to disrupt things for Dom and Wendell.
So I think the perfect outcome might be Laurel getting that extra vote, because at least then there would be no excuse to hide behind of I don't have the numbers to make this move, there's no way I can make this happen, because I think it would be there. She could at least take the risk. But when it's Sebastian, who it seems like is fully behind Dom and Wendell, this, if anything, extinguishes any shot at them not making it further in the game, because if he's with them, he uses his extra vote. Any rebellion, like even if Angela, Jonathan, and Laura all decided this is our time, that would just get wiped out by Sebastian's extra vote. So this is almost the worst thing that could happen in terms of keeping any suspense going into that final six.
Well, I think basically everything on Ghost Island has fallen into not the wrong hands, but pretty meaningless hands in the grand scheme of the game. I know Kellen did use that extra vote on Laurel in a spot that I'm sure had ramifications as far as their relationship going forward on the island. But in terms of affecting the boot order, or I'm sure by, you know, when the season is said and done, we will look back on Ghost Island and all of the advantages that they tried to throw in and all of the idols and all of the fake idols that people ended up getting and look at this as a cautionary tale, Dom, in what happens when it all falls into the wrong hands from a game staying interesting perspective, where every kind of twist that you put in that is intended to give the minority outs to disrupt the majority is instead used to just make the majority even stronger.
But would you rather, would you rather that be more heavy-handed with explicitly giving the minority stuff which is meant to help them overturn the setup of the game? Or is it just, do you hold to this idea of fairness where anyone should be able to get it with an equal probability, and if that happens to be the most dominant player in the game who doesn't need the help, then that sucks, but that's just the way it is.
Well, I think what Survivor Maryland and Survivor South Africa and potentially Survivor New Zealand, which I haven't checked out yet, but I'm guessing is better than Ghost Island, are demonstrating to me right now is it's not the advantages or twists or whatever that are going to make Survivor a more interesting game on a basic level. Like the fundamental issue with Survivor is it's just so obviously correct for the majority of people in short-term view, a purely short-term view, to just stick together for a while. And you really have to have, as they do on Survivor Maryland or in Survivor South Africa, people out there who seem to truly view every single vote like it's the most important vote of the game, and are the last thing they would ever want to do is go to the end in a spot where they feel like they can't win. You have to have people out there who are dying to not do anything, but not just addicted to making big moves, but allergic to the idea of not making a move in time.
Mm-hmm.
I think like that is the solution. It doesn't matter what you do with the idols. Like, that's all going to break even in the long run between helping the majority and the minority. To me, the casting is so clearly the way that you shake things up into making the game way more interesting instead of getting seasons like this. Or see, you know, all the seasons that get panned like this one recently has been, where people just dominate. It's because the casts are not competitive.
And not to evangelize too much for Survivor South Africa, but that's something which really stands out when you watch the first few episodes there, is almost everybody, with one or two exceptions, is actively playing hard. And not in a way that's recklessly sabotaging their own game, although that definitely does describe one or two people. But you can tell everyone there really has the fire. And so you see, I'm not going to name any names, but there's one person who, when they are put into the minority as a result of the first vote, they instantly go into game mode. They're like, okay, this is my plan to shake things up. It's risky, it's far-fetched, it's probably not going to work, but I'm going to take my swing and see what happens, because the alternative is I get picked off, and I don't like that, and the TV viewers are not going to like that either. And that's exactly the mentality that you want to see.
And you saw this exact same thing on the most recent fantastic season of Australian Survivor as well. Even on these pre-merge tribes with literally 12 people on each team, people were bawling out of control trying to make sure the vote went their way.
There were people who I didn't know who they were yet, just coming out of the woodwork to attempt some big move that was, again, maybe ill-conceived, but the fact that they were conceiving at all was an encouraging sign.
Right, and I will grant that these are seasons where Australia has had close to 20 years at this point, in South Africa as well, of watching the U.S. version dying, you know, building up fans of the U.S. version who would be dying to play Survivor if they ever got the chance, and now they're finally getting that chance. And so I do understand that the casting pool, I'm sure, is going to be a little more tilted in favor of those overseas shows still to this point, just because they haven't had as many opportunities to put fans on the show. But it does seem like the U.S. is going out of their way to put people on who've never even seen the show, and if they had seen the show, wouldn't even care that much about making massive moves to win the game.
Well, let's take a step back then, because one of the big things that was hailed preseason was this is a season of superfans. And Jeff came out and said explicitly, we want to put superfans on the show. We want a cast that is full of them. And we want to sit back and watch the magic happen. And if you look down the list on this cast, there are a lot of fans. And I don't think there are noticeably less than any other season. So is it just that too many of them went early and the people who slipped through the cracks are the ones who are the least exciting? Or are we meant to discard this idea that being a super fan necessarily involves making these big or exciting or flashy moves? Because Laurel might be the perfect counterpoint to that, if anything.
Right. No, I think being a super fan, I love hearing that in general, because I think a super fan is more likely than an average player, or, you know, than a random applicant, and certainly more likely than a recruit to be out there playing hard for first place only. But it's certainly not a hard and fast rule, or even close to one, that a super fan is always going to be a better casting choice than a recruit. Like, I definitely don't want to make it sound like, which I'm worried I have, that I'm just completely against ever recruiting people for the show. I will happily grant that there's plenty of upside in having recruited people, on the show, and plenty of them have become some of the, you know, the most historically renowned players that we've ever seen. But at the same time, like, it's just me playing the odds. It's when it's you are far more likely to find someone out there like Adam Klein, for instance, who just like refuses to do anything but play for first place. And like, I, you know, is willing to say to David Wright, I think that's a great combo. And Hannah out there, of all of these people in the end, playing it and talking in blunt terms about like what is a good game move for me. And I frankly feel like a lot of the most recent seasons were just not opening the door for that kind of recipe near the end game, because those people just don't exist in the first place. Okay, cool. So let's get into the immunity challenge controversy a little bit here, Dom, where at the end of this challenge, we have Wendell, it seems, does indeed complete this slide puzzle first, but does not call for Jeff. And instead, Laurel is the one who gets Jeff's attention, and she gets the immunity necklace. What did you make of this? Was this the right ruling here by Jeff and production?
It seems like the correct ruling. I found it quizzical that they even showed this in the first place, because this seems like exactly the type of thing which doesn't really make great TV, and which is kind of awkward no matter who you are, whether you're a player in the game, whether you're watching it, whatever. And it's, you expect this to end up on the cutting room floor. And I imagine there have been so many instances, maybe even some this season, of confusion at challenges where we're not even aware that that happened, because of course they didn't show it, because why would they? And yet somehow they chose to include this. Maybe that's because there was so little else going on in the episode that they just need to fill the time somehow. But what was your take on just seeing this in the first place?
That was the exact same take I had, was why the hell did this make air? I'm sure this happens all the time at challenges, and they would make a point to make sure this kind of thing does not make it onto the TV show. And so I was wondering why the hell this was left in, and I would totally get it if this episode ends with Wendell being voted out, and he was that close. He literally had the puzzle done first, and if he just called for Jeff, he would have still been in the game, but obviously that didn't happen, and when that doesn't happen, I go back to really wondering what we are meant to take away from this, because this is not at all an accident. And to me, this is supposed to tell us something about Wendell, but I'm really not sure if we're supposed to like him for his sportsmanship or find him whiny.
So here's my thought. What this is meant to convey is meant to reinforce that bond between Wendell and Laurel, which we've seen alluded to quite frequently over the course of the season, but not really made as explicit. I think those two are going to be one of the defining partnerships. And so whether it's Wendell wins the final immunity and decides to take Laurel over Dom, finally overcoming that moral hurdle in his mind, maybe, or if it's Laurel who wins that and has to choose which of the two of them am I going to take with me, if either, and she takes Wendell, and then maybe Dom has to win his way into the end, and him winning that fire challenge is what cements his ultimate triumph there.
Dominic, I think that is a very good call. I think you might be exactly right about that being the purpose for leaving in this immunity challenge dispute near the end, and showing Wendell, and Laurel quickly coming to a solution there, and both of them being cool with it, and potentially that playing into Laurel's decision that night about not wanting to vote Wendell out when he deserved it, and that being something that like bonds them together. I definitely think you may be onto something there. And actually, with that in mind, let's transition a little bit into calls for what we expect to see actually play out as far as like boot order and so forth in this finale. And the place I want to look at the most, I think, is that final four spot where we're going to have just one person bringing someone else and then the other two go to fire. For me, I still have Donathan penciled in as one of the people in the fire. And I frankly think I'm at this point ready to pencil Laurel in as either the final immunity challenge winner or the person who's getting taken. But the one call I would think I am the most confident in making entering this finale is that Laurel will be in the finals and probably not be receiving any votes.
Okay, I think I can co-sign that. And I would add to that, I don't think she's going to be the one making fire. I think she's going to get to the finals by some other means,
right,
whether it's winning herself or getting taken. Because it feels like there are so many other reasons for anybody else in that foursome to end up in fire somehow, whether they get betrayed or we've seen this foreshadowing of them making fire or talking about fire or just being in the general vicinity of a fire at various points. Whereas Laurel, I think, really has not had any of that symbolism. And game logic wise, it makes a lot of sense that she would just get that berth in the finals by some other means.
Yeah, I'm actually at this point, I guess Laurel probably wasn't talking about her gut as much, but I would have thought that like the trajectory I thought Kellen was headed for because of all of the discussion about trusting her gut was that of one where much more similar to what we're actually seeing Laurel play out for Laurel here, where I thought basically Kellen's story was going to be she somehow finds her way to the end and then makes that wrong decision after winning the final immunity challenge or something along those lines. But it seems to me like Kellen trusting her gut almost was just incidental. Like Kellen was someone on her way out the door here who for the last few weeks was saying, hey, we need to do something about Dom and Wendell. And I don't think the same irony ended up being there for Kellen that I'm guessing is going to be there at the end of the season for Laurel.
And if you want to follow through on that prediction that people made of, because you had these close-ups of that one mistake is going to ruin your game or something from Ghost Island with Kellen, I think officially now that mistake is not using that extra vote in the right way. And that, based on what Sebastian received and the fact that it's back in play in the first place, I think that officially puts all of that to bed now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, actually, quick sidebar before we continue with these finale predictions. I don't know what all there is to say about the vote, but feel free to bring up whatever you want from that. But let's wrap up just parting thoughts on this tribal council and Kellen in general. Where do you want to dive in on Kellen? I know we've talked a lot about her over the course of the season, but now that we've actually seen her go out here in seventh place, what are your parting thoughts?
You know, I was a big Kellen fan for much of the season. I think she received way too much blowback for some of the things she said and did. And even though Naviti Strong grated on me at times as well, like, I can look past that. I think she added a lot to the season and was a fun character and seemed like a genuinely sweet and kind person in real life. And it's weird to see now some of those people who hated her the whole time, who, having seen her Ponderosa video where now she's out of the game, come around and say, oh, well, I didn't like her, but she seemed like a really nice person. This is the exact same person that you were seeing for 10 weeks prior. She was on display the whole time. And because you weren't able to separate your hatred of Naviti from her as a person, you weren't able to look past that. So that's on you. It's not like she's revealing some new side of herself that was heretofore unseen or what. You see what I'm getting at?
I believe heretofore. I think that's the correct usage of heretofore. Yeah, I'm with you totally. I think Kellen was a fantastic casting choice this season, and I really enjoyed basically everything that she ended up bringing to the show, even though I understand she rubbed many viewers the wrong way, and I do understand, I think, why in a lot of cases there would be certain personalities that would not be so drawn to the Kellens of the world. But I love having Kellen on Survivor, and she is, when we talk about the kind of people that are that I do want cast on the show, in that like fantasy land where everyone is out there constantly worried only about coming in first place. To me, Kellen, as much as she talked about Naviti Strong for the whole pre-merge and early into the merge, when the time came to turn on the big power players within Naviti, Kellen, as far as I was concerned, or as far as I could tell, I guess, was leading the charge and trying to make that happen and recognized, okay, we've taken the Naviti Strong to the best spot for that, and now that's going to end, and I'm going to start playing for myself. And I really loved seeing that.
Well, you can say the big blind spot maybe was not recognizing that Desiree was coming after her and being so locked in on Naviti Strong that she didn't see the hit being placed on her.
Sure.
But that's you can say that's a mistake in the game. I don't think that takes away from her appeal as a cast member at all. And I think that she clearly was able to develop these very deep bonds with people. And you saw multiple people, not just in this episode, but in the secret scenes and the exit press, saying, Kellen was one of my closest friends out there. I really liked her and trusted her. And that's an amazing skill to have as a player. And if you can get some of that, I guess, instability under control, or maybe the timing, then I think she could be lethal if she comes back as a second timer.
Yeah, I could see Kellen having potentially similar meta to like what Sarah Lucina had entering her second season, and I could see Kellen being, like you said, just totally lethal on a return shot.
Which is weird, because Kellen is very expressive and often wears a heart on her sleeve, whereas Sarah does not do that. She is one of the least expressive people with the flattest affects that I've ever seen, and yet I do think there's a comparison there that's worth exploring.
Yeah. What do you think about the prospect of Kellen actually coming back? Do you think that's going to be something the show is into the idea of?
I think so. It might have to be in the next year or two, because I think there's diminishing returns, certainly, and people in that kind of Kellen mold lose that what am I looking for? Lose that sense of familiarity quite quickly. But if she can get a spot, I think she'll be in contention, and she can definitely make the most of it.
Yeah. You know, we've still not had anyone named Colin ever on Survivor, and this is our first Dom we've ever had, and it seems like he's doing a good job holding it down for you. At the end of the season here for Kellen, I'm very happy that she was out there holding it down for people who have names that sound like ours. Kellen and Colleen both got 7th place, I believe, in their respective seasons of Survivor. So I feel like if I ever went out there, that would be the mark to clear, and I would be drawing virtually dead at doing that. So I'm going to stay here. Dom, let's get into some more finale predictions here. I ran a Twitter poll this week asking my followers, essentially, how they're breaking down the winner equity pie between Dom and Wendell and the rest of the field. And it seems like they're pretty representative of how I've personally, like the conflict I've personally been going through. The results of that poll, there were 330-ish votes, 55% on Dominic, 43% on Wendell, and 2% on the remaining field, which is roughly where I'm at, minus the field having any equity. But I think if I'm being honest with myself, like while recognizing how grossly uninteresting this take is as Survivor commentary, and while also recognizing that I've said more or less this exact same thing for the last month now, I still feel like it's basically 55-45, 60-40 tops in favor of Dominic at this point, or Wendell if you're a Wendell person. But I really think if I was offered 2-1 odds on either one of them, I would snap book it on either one of them.
So I said last week that I was flipping back to Wendell. I thought that was where the smart money was going to be. And I think I'm coming back around to Dom again. And if I lock in a prediction now, I guarantee I will change and then change back again multiple times before the finale. I am genuinely torn on what I think is going to happen. I think Dom is a front runner, and I imagine it'll stay that way, but I honestly don't know. And so as much as the season is lacking suspense in so many other aspects, I love that that is still something I can ruminate over for the next 3 days until the big reveal happens.
Yeah, to me that is what's kept this season so interesting, and what's kept me so relatively happy to keep tuning in on Wednesday nights. Like if I thought this was a Mike Holloway situation where there was only one conceivable winner, I would have been way lower on this season a long time ago. But I truly feel like this is a historically good job here by the editors, pure in terms of keeping the winner up in the air, at least between two people. And for a long time, it was between four, if not more people. Like up until episode 10 or 11, we were coming in here talking about at least Kellen and Laurel also still having at least, 10-15% of the winner equity, which is lately something that they've been much better about, but for so long was completely off the table for so many Survivor seasons, having three winner candidates even at the merge.
Okay, call your shot then. What do you think is going to happen?
I wish you hadn't asked me that question and we could have just gotten out of here before making any really committal statements one way or the other. Before I make my final call, I want to bring up what I think is the most interesting point, and I can't decide which way I'm leaning on this yet. And that is, for me, whichever one of these two we show up on Wednesday night and they are talking about what their family back home is up to and how much it's going to impact their life back home, that's going to be the person who's immediately going to jump out to the front runner spot for me. And with that in mind, I really feel like we would have heard probably more about Dominic and his wife and three young children, the same way we heard very early pre-merge, very regularly throughout the course of the entire season from both Jeremy Collins and Ben Driebergen, who were in remarkably similar situations as far as their home life is concerned. They were constantly hitting us over the head with how much that was going to mean to them if it went, if this game ended up going their way. And it's jarring to me almost how little we've actually heard from Dominic in that capacity. What do you think about that?
That stands out to me too. And I was thinking this episode, because you got to see them go on the reward and you see Dom like playing with the kids and being like this family man. And yet before that point, I don't think we'd had a single explicit reference that I can remember to him being married with kids, right? You had Kristen with the family visit. But beyond that, this isn't a frequent topic of conversation the way that it was with Jeremy, with some of these other people for whom that was almost a focal point of their survivor journey. And you have to think, like, if Dom does go on to win, why not give him that too? Like, why not add this thing, which I imagine there are people out there who find Dom a bit abrasive or arrogant or whatever, that would serve to humanize him in such a big way that it would almost be silly not to include that if you had that available to you. So that does have me wondering. What's your take on that whole thing?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is they seem very happy with taking that line when it's Jeremy or when it's Ben or anyone. You know, Sarah got to talk about having a baby or maybe two and Wyatt back home. I really would have thought that if Dom won, they wouldn't be too worried about hitting that story too hard. It seems like Survivor really can't get enough of making it clear to the viewers why we should be rooting for the eventual winner on a personal level. And you're right, apart from Kristen getting to come out and Dom talking about his family then, it certainly has not been nearly the same extent that Jeremy and Ben both got. And I keep using those two because they are very recent and are in very similar situations where I really would have thought that Dominic, especially after finding all of these idols, he would have given some confessional about how this is for someone at his family, and they would have shown that, and he's tearing up on the beach, taking some time to himself. This to me would have been totally par for the course if Dominic were to end up winning. And the fact that they have not chosen to do that, to me, might honestly be the biggest point at this juncture for me in Wendell's favor. And the other thing, as far as like Wendell's loved one storyline would be concerned, is I know we got that scene early on of the tribe singing happy birthday to his girlfriend Nicole, and we got to see his dad come out, and that was awesome. Wendell Sr. was great. But one thing that I really could, I certainly don't know with any degree of certainty one way or the other, but I believe I have heard that in the time between this season wrapping, filming, and now airing, Wendell and his girlfriend have broken up, and I could see that being something that the editors would have initially really wanted to be a big part of Wendell's potential winning storyline, but they get the news that this relationship has not worked out, and that they're going to have to go a different route. And for instance, this week, I noticed it may have been going on earlier, but Wendell all throughout this episode is wearing an N necklace, which I assume stands for Nicole. It's super prominent on the middle of his chest, and that is never explained in any capacity, and I would have thought that would also be something we would hear more about if Wendell were to go on to win, but I could see that kind of sticky situation making them have some kind of on-the-fly decision to nix that idea.
And I don't want to speculate about it because it feels kind of gauche to bring all of that stuff into the debate, but it's weird though, because so often nowadays Survivor is looking for like the young single people, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they do tend to valorize like the family men or the moms or the people who can fit into that archetype so easily. Why do you think they would want to make Wendell's girlfriend part of his story in such a big way? Because outside of that one happy birthday scene, which people said at the time was a bit jarring, like, why would you expect that to be part of his winner story if that's what this is turning out to be?
Well, because I would imagine that was what he was talking about, was like the people he was looking forward to seeing back at home. I'm guessing his girlfriend was near the top of the list and he was talking about her quite a bit.
Yeah, but there are other people who have partners who go out there, and it's that doesn't become the center of their edit, especially when you have so much other stuff about Wendell that you could put in to show why he won and why he's so likable and why you should be cheering for him to win.
Right, I agree, but I do think with the winner, they want you having a really strong emotional attachment to that person and to know how it's going to positively impact their life for them and their family going forward. And I could see if most of what they were going for was going to be Wendell talking about his girlfriend and then they find out that that's fallen apart, that could be something that could leave the editors in a tricky spot there. And I do want to quickly speculate about that. Just one angle that I think is worth noting, just as a guy who is roughly Wendell's age, and this ties into our patron series that we've been doing recently, talking about Big Brother 10, where Dan Giesling spends the entire time talking on the live feeds about his girlfriend Monica, comes out of the house $500,000 richer, and a month or two later, there's no more Monica. I could see it being the case. If you're a 30-year-old guy who knows, I've been dating this person for a while, I'm not sure I want to marry them, but I do know I have $1 million coming my way in a few months. We are definitely breaking up if it's me and that hat. If I'm not positive I want to marry you, it's not just for me. It's I don't want you getting your hopes up that that's going to be your lifestyle, like that's going to be like our future is now we're all set.
I agree with you, but it still feels so like across the line to go there.
Is that, I mean, to me, that's just realistic. That, like, that is what a person, that is the reaction a person may have if they knew they had $1 million coming their way. And again, I have absolutely no idea what's going on with Wendell and Nicole, but that is certainly something I think could have played a role. All right. Sorry for making anyone uncomfortable with that kind of speculation, but I cannot help but consider that.
Yeah. Coming back to the question then, call your shot. You can't go off on this possibly offensive tangent to try and distract me from the fact that you haven't made a concrete prediction yet. So do you think we're getting Dom versus Wendell heads up? And if so, what do you expect the outcome to be?
So I, for the longest time, thought that we would not get that. I thought we would get one of them waltzes to victory after the other one loses in fire, and I really thought it would be Donathan beats Dominic in fire, and then Wendell effortlessly beats Laurel and Donathan in the finals. However, I really do feel like we are still in the era of the eventual winner and an eventual compelling losing finalist being the two big stars of the season. And for the longest time, I thought Kellen was going to be one of those people, but maybe it really is that obvious. And Dom and Wendell do just make it to the finals together. And at this point, I actually might be leaning that they do, just because I want to give the editors enough credit to know, for them to recognize, obviously, as soon as either of Dom or Wendell is voted out, the other one is the automatic winner and everyone will know it. And so they have to still be there in the finals for there to be any suspense.
That's what I'm leaning to. Unless you effectively say, once you get to that point in the finale, we don't need suspense anymore. We've got the outcome that the audience is going to be happy with, because that's what we've primed them to think by that stage. And leading up to, because that Final Four Fire Challenge might come with half an hour, 40 minutes left in the finale itself. So I could see them saying that is effectively the end of the season in terms of other possible outcomes being entertained. And now you just get to watch the coronation in action.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see that still obviously going any number of ways. But if you want my concrete call that I'm piecing together as I'm prefacing this sentence, I am going to go with whatever order of Angela and Sebastian out at Final Six and Final Five, and it does indeed come down to those four, I will say Laurel wins and takes Wendell, and then and then Dom beats Donathan in fire and wins the jury vote over Wendell and Laurel. I could see it being close between he and Wendell still. I could potentially see it being, how many jurors are there? Is a tie in play where Laurel's casting the deciding vote between, like, breaking a tie?
It's going to be 10 jurors, because Chris Noble was 13 and he's the jury foreman this season.
Got it. So a tie is in play potentially. I don't think that's going to be in store, but who knows? Where are you? Give me your concrete boot order, your sheet of integrity for how this is going to play out.
If you thought Laura was getting a lot of heat at the moment, wait until there's a 5-5 tie and she breaks it in favor of Wendell. Like that's gonna, there's going to be a lot of debate on Twitter after that. But The thing is, I think there's always been this tension of, will Dom and Wendell turn on each other? Or when it comes down to it, will they actively pick each other to be there with them? And with this fire twist at Final Four in play, you can have that betrayal happen and the two of them still make it there together at the Final Three. So that might be the way to tie everything together that we've seen so far. So it could be instead like Wendell wins Final Immunity and takes Laurel instead of Dom, because both of them are his solid allies, and they could portray that as him choosing between his two closest friends, and he knows that he has a better chance against Laurel, so he has to take her, and that's one of the big ends to his story. And then Dom is playing a fire challenge for $1 million, essentially, and that's another big selling point as well. So I still don't know what I think in terms of the mechanics. I think your take of Laurel wins and takes Wendell is certainly in play. I could also see, could you see Dom wins and takes Laurel and then Wendell has to fight Donathan? Is that on the table for you?
Totally. Yeah. I think Dom, we've heard plenty from Dom in terms of, hey, maybe cutting Wendell may be something I would consider doing down the line.
Yeah. So I think in the macro debate, I am going to say Dom and Wendell are there together. I think it's the most satisfying way for the season to end as they portrayed it so far. And the fact that they've had such different approaches to the game, and also the fact that we have heard so much about Wendell's relationships with people potentially on the jury, that it wouldn't make sense for that to not amount to anything if he goes out in fourth place. Whereas equally, like, for Dom not to be in the finals at this point would seem so against everything they've been building up that I think he has to be there. I think Wendell probably has to be there. And I imagine they have to be there with Laurel. So I think that's our final three that we can look forward to.
So I agree with most of that. I don't think I agree that Dom has to be in the finals. I could see Dom losing that fire challenge. And frankly, if we don't end up getting Dom and Wendell in the finals, getting that like big time showdown, I tweeted this a couple days ago at this point, or a while ago at this point, but I really hope that what we get instead is a spot where Dom and Wendell want to go to the finals and have that showdown, but for whatever reason, the immunity falls the wrong way, and the fire challenge prevents them from having what would have been the first competitive pair of finalists in years, and we never see the Final Four challenge again, the fire challenge again.
That would be truly tragic after everything that we've had to sit through over the past 2 months or so.
No. That would be exactly what they deserve. After breaking the game to give Ben Driebergen the win in season 35, the game should break right back at them and take away what would have been the first competitive pair of finalists. That's how I feel about it.
I can see what you're saying, but we only get two seasons of Survivor a year, or now we get 12 seasons of Survivor a year, so maybe we can afford to sacrifice one. But with that in mind, I still want to see a satisfying ending more than I want them to get screwed over by their own decisions.
I agree with that, but I am also an extremely vindictive person, and I would be totally fine if the disaster... But truly, all I care about, like, all I want to know about season 37, I don't give a fuck about the theme, I don't care about what celebrities are on it, all I want to know is that Final Four fire challenge back? Because Jeff swore up and down, this is part of the show going forward now. It wouldn't surprise me at all if that is not there for season 37.
I wonder when we're going to find that out. I imagine if it does come back, we probably would have heard about it by now, right? That's one of those details that would be easier to verify.
Well, so as far as my early call on the return of the fire challenge, if it's not back for season 37, is we may for sure see it again someday, but when that happens, it will be like season 35, where they will not tell the people about it in advance, and they will do it conditionally again. They will do it when it's a good spot for that, for the underdog to get a fighting chance.
Yeah, what your take then is, we're not saying it back. This is its last hurrah for now.
My take is they will not be telling the players ahead of time that it is back, and they will put it in if they think it's a good spot for it, and they will not if they don't.
Okay.
That would be my take for how the fire challenge is going to play out going forward. Dom, any jury thoughts, any jury votes you think are going to be the most interesting, or jurors you're looking most forward to?
Well, let's go down the line, because we can skip a few of them if we don't think it's worth it. But yeah, but there are a few we need to touch on here. So Chris Noble, first of all, is it going to be game respecting game? Is he going to vote for Dom if he's there, or is he going to find a reason to deflect his vote to Wendell, or maybe even Laurel, or whoever that third person is?
I really think Chris could go a number of ways. I think, honestly, if there was someone who was like most likely to vote third party, it might be Chris Noble.
Yeah, and I will say quickly, if we do get Dom, Wendell, and Laurel as a final three, that is in contention with my favorite group of finalists of all time. Like that is a really solid group, despite everything we said about like only having that being satisfying if they try to turn on each other. I would still be happy to see them there at the end, and even if in the like the miracle scenario where Laurel somehow wins that, that's perfectly fine by me. I mean, I could sleep well at night knowing that happened.
Right. I think we would both give the same answer as far as like the best cumulative final three to this point. I think we would both say Coach, Sophie, and Albert. But this would for sure be in contention with that group, if not the new number one for me, if it was a Dom, Wendell, and Laurel final three here, as far as like how much I like each of the finalists as Survivor players overall, for sure. So yeah, Chris Noble, I think, could go any number of ways. I'm certainly looking forward to see all that he brings to the jury conversation, which I believe and I think I do buy that this will be a part of the show forever going forward, that it's going to be the same new jury format of back and forth rather than one at a time going up and standing and addressing the finalists. So with that in mind, who do you think are going to be the more vocal jurors, the Zeke's and Andrea's of this season that are really there, mixing it up in a lot of the jury conversations?
I think Chris, probably. I think Desiree is an understated pick to be one of those jury four people. Maybe Kellen. I could see, like, if Jonathan goes out in some, like, blaze of glory, I could see him having a lot to say for himself at that final tribal. Really, whichever one of that foursome is not there, I think is going to have a lot to say and a good platform to say it. Beyond that, with the Malolos, Michael maybe could give like a Spencer-style speech on behalf of one of the jurors. But beyond that, like, I don't see Libby or Jenna playing a big part. I hope Sebastian doesn't play a big part. Angela, I think, is not going to have too much to say. They'll all say their pieces. But beyond that, I think it is going to be the same way the edit's been for the past few months of a few people leading the charge and the rest of them just there in the background.
Yeah. Do you think there's a circumstance where Dom or Wendell is a juror and doesn't vote for the other one to win? Like, could it be a case where one of them cuts the other and they vote for a different person to win? Or do you think that if they are on the jury, they are a lock for whoever makes the finals?
I think Dom votes for Wendell. I think Wendell, if Dom cuts him and Laurel is there too, might have a choice to make, but I think would ultimately still come around and vote for Dom.
Okay. Yeah, I think the jury vote I could see going a number of different ways, where I could see it being a very close vote if it is between Dom and Wendell, or obviously I think if it's just one of them in the finals against any other combination of people, I suspect it's a blowout. But Koss, I saw tweeting the other day, tweeting about how Wendell is just the new Chelsea Meisner, and we all just are too in love with him to see that he's just aiding the obviously more dominant player in their victory. Where do you come down on that? Or could you see Wendell getting blown out here in a jury vote?
I did say a few weeks ago that this doesn't feel like a Tyson and Jervis or Kim and Chelsea situation, but it might well be. It might be that Wendell isn't given the respect or the hype by the jury that we as the audience have attached to him over the season. So I do wonder, though, because we have, do you expect there to be these blocks on the jury, these factions who could swing the thing either way? Because if the Malolos vote together, there are a solid three or four of them that could be decisive. If the jury overall is leaning towards Dom, but they go for Wendell and maybe take one or two stragglers along with them, that could take it to Wendell despite everything else. So do you see something like that happening? And who do you see being involved in that, if that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, the Malolo contingent could be interesting, but I would suspect that as this is all going down, the jury kind of has, as is the case, I would guess, in virtually every season, the jury, while they're off in Ponderosa, is playing for themselves, like, the scenarios of how all of this is playing out, and then when the new person who gets voted out comes in and fills them in on how it went down, there's kind of, like, a constantly evolving kind of jury hierarchy as far as how likely they would be to vote for certain players over the others. And I suspect that Final Tribal, and this is kind of, like, why we talk about Final Tribal Council rarely really mattering, because people usually have had their minds made up for weeks at that point, but I actually could see this being a Final Tribal Council, to get back to that, like, Malolo contingent, where this could be potentially live between Dom and Wendell. If it is genuinely this, any kind of trio of or triad of people or duo of people with their minds genuinely not made up in a truly close vote, I actually could see this being a pretty fluid final tribal council under the right circumstances. So to go back to the initial question, I don't think of Wendell as potentially being the next kind of Chelsea Meisner. I don't think they would give him this kind of treatment if that was the case.
And I completely agree about it maybe being live, especially as, with the exception of Laurel and maybe Jonathan, they don't really know what's going on behind the scenes in that Dom and Wendell power duo, right? So if you like Wendell more, you might be inclined to give a lot of that credit to Wendell. And if you like Dom more, the same thing, same thing goes for him. So it could be up in the air. Like, people could be coming in not knowing who to give that credit or blame for, and it coming down to the jury questioning, as Jeff Probst and the Survivor gods intended, to actually make that decision.
Yeah, no, I mean, this could be one of the most fun final tribal councils that we've seen in a long, long, long time. It's just, I think, unfortunately, if that is the case, this season will still be remembered as a pretty big-time clunker, at least post-merge. Like, I think a lot of how a season is remembered has to do with particularly the post-merge, if there were any interesting shakeups after the game became truly individual. And I think this season will probably suffer from that, no matter how this finale plays out. But do you see, Dom, a timeline where this finale could bail out Ghost Island and make people view it as like an above-average season? Even
I don't know about above average, but I think it could redeem the season in large part. And I think people really are overstating how bad the season is in the moment out of recency bias. Like, if you look down the episodes, I thought almost all of the pre-merge was pretty solid. The merge episode was great. Then the Libby boot, whatever, and then you had some clunkers in the middle, but the Desiree boot that we had for the live know-it-alls, I thought that was a solid episode. And potentially if this finale is good too, then you're looking at a good pre-merge, a great merge episode, a pretty lackluster post-merge, but with a few bright spots in it, and then a good finale to regain the momentum at the end. I think that's a recipe for a decent season.
I think that's a pretty optimistic way of revising history to make this season sound good. But I agree with you. The pre-merge was very, very good. And a lot of the characters from that, like, as we were saying, for the first like 7 or 8 episodes, we were saying whoever got voted out this week, I would be totally fine with seeing them back. I do think Ghost Island, the season playing out the way that it did, where frankly, I think most of the people who were cast kind of to be the quieter people to play in the background as the bigger characters get most of the screen time, all just happened to make it to the merge and then get voted out back to back to back to back to back to back to back. And there's just not much you can do with that.
So I will have more to say about this when we do our season wrap up. But I think the recent Twitter debate that's been had over what's the worst 3-season stretch, how far down is this season, there are some major like black spots in people's memories there. Like, people forget just how bad certain seasons and certain stretches were, and it's going to be good to have a reminder of that when that debate finally comes.
Right. I tweeted recently that as Survivor is wrapping up its worst 3-season stretch of all time, check out these other versions that are going on that are much better. Essentially tweeted that. Steven, of course, had to at me as well, and now he's on my shit list too, saying, hey, 21, 22, 23, 24, all no picnic in that stretch either. And I actually think I'm going to come around and I'm going to say I was totally wrong about that. You're right. You and Steven are right. This is not the worst stretch of 3 seasons in a row. It is the second worst stretch of 3 seasons in a row, but I will give the nod to 22, 23, and 24, basically just because 22 and 24 might literally be my bottom 2 seasons of all time, and thus 23 would have to be pretty damn good to lift that mathematical average up enough for it to not be the worst stretch of 3 seasons. The same way, just because Token Sheens and Heroes versus Villains are both easily in my top 5 seasons of all time, I said 18, 19, 20 might be my favorite stretch of 3 seasons just because Samoa is still plenty good. And then when you average the math out on all 3 of them, it's fantastic. Even though Samoa itself is probably not in anyone's like top 5 or so. But yeah, that will be an interesting debate, I suppose, to have. And hopefully, Dom, we don't have another less interesting season around the corner with Survivor David versus Goliath, and we don't have to have the discussion about if 34, 35, 36, 37 is in the conversation with that 21 through 24 stretch, because we know no one deserves that again.
the cast of 37 already getting off to a very strong start in terms of their interaction with the show, but hopefully they're not representative of everything we've got coming to us over the next few months.
Yeah, Dom, any other calls you want to make before we watch how this finale plays out?
So let's make some predictions, which at least part of it is going to be wrong, for sure. But let's at least call our shot. So what do you have in terms of how the finale is going to run out here?
I have Sebastian and Angela going out in some order at 6 and 5. Give me Dom over Donathan at Fire. All season long, I've been saying I think Donathan's going to win the fight. I started out thinking he was going to lose it. And then like week 3, I said, okay, Donathan's in the Fire and he's going to win it. And he's going to make the finals and be a plucky champion who comes up just short. But now I'm actually thinking Donathan is going to be that fourth place person, just because I do think Laurel is almost definitely going to be a finalist. And I'm giving the editors enough credit to know that Wendell and Dom have to be in there in the end against each other for there to be any suspense at all. So I guess just purely by process of elimination, I have Angela and Sebastian in some order, Dominic then going out at 4, and then give me Dom over Wendell over Laurel by a vote of 6-4-0. I'm going to call this one close.
Wow.
How about you?
You said Dominic out of 4, but I think you meant Donathan, but I see what you're
going
for.
Yeah. Sorry, Donathan out at four, and then I'm gonna stick with the 60-40 plan and say Dom's gonna win 6-4-0. Where are you coming in?
So in this universe, you think Donathan, despite his antics this episode, gets taken back into the fold, or is it just a case of he's less threatening than Sebastian and Angela, or maybe Laurel insists on keeping him around? How do you see that going?
Yeah, I suspect Laurel is going to potentially play a role, and that they are going to be ready to cut Sebastian as soon as Final 6. I don't think any of them intend to go to the end with Sebastian or see him as a person that's they're dying to keep around at this point. And then maybe Donathan wins the right challenge, or maybe Laurel puts her foot down or whatever, but somehow Angela goes out at Final 5. Give me your full boot list here now, Dom, and the way the jury vote's going to go.
So I'll say Sebastian and Angela out of 6 and 5. And then for the final challenge, I guess, give me Wendell wins and takes Laurel. And then it's Dom versus Donathan. Dom wins. And then in the finals, I'm going to say, I kind of want to flip back to Wendell now. God, this is.
Do it.
It's tough. You're making me want to.
Yeah, I'm not stopping you from doing it.
Fuck it, let's go. Give me Wendell 6-4 over Dom. So okay. we have something to move for. We have a clear difference now.
And actually, I believe, let me quickly pull this up. I don't think we've even referenced this one single time in our podcasting over the course of this season. But we did that must lose draft at the start for our season preview, and I believe we have. Okay, I have the results here now. Wendell is on your team and Dom is on my team, so we actually have now picked opposite of what our draft would suggest we should pick. So either way, no matter what happens, one of us will be right and the other one will win the draft.
I know that no one cares about your draft in 2018, but that is a nice, like, poetic ending to wrap all this up with.
It's a total lose-lose situation for both of us. Neither of us can sweep the prediction this season. For the record, you drafted. Actually, this is fairly sick. The final two picks on your team were Wendell and Laurel, who are very likely to be two of the people in the finals. And then Dominic actually went fairly early to my team. But so we'll see how that ends up playing out. Oh, yeah, okay. So if Dominic wins, you will win the draft, but I will win the correct calls. And then if Wendell wins, I will win the draft, and you will win the correct finale call. And no one will care, regardless of how it goes.
I'm just wavering because I can imagine now, I'm just picturing it in my mind, like they get there and like Sebastian loves Wendell because he gave him the seashell or whatever, and like the Malolos, they kind of rub the wrong way by the two of them as a duo, but maybe they give more, they like Wendell more, or like maybe he wins the final challenge and that puts him over the top. I could just see how the pieces come together there, but see, now I want to flip back to Dom. I don't know. This is...
You can't flip. You got to make up your mind here. We need a final call. Are you locking in on Wendell, or are you going to switch back now, and the people who tuned out a few minutes ago are going to be totally misled?
But the thing is, if I say Dom 6-4 over Wendell, that's just the same call as you. That's we can't end on that, surely. Yeah. So
you're 6-4 on Wendell. I've decided for you, and you don't have outs when we come back here next week to say, oh, you just made up my mind.
Okay, fine. Let's stick with it. I think I'm going to be wrong, and I kind of hope that I'm wrong, but let's see how it plays out.
If you think you're going to be wrong, it's not your call. what's going on here, Tom? This is horrible podcasting to close out the season.
I'm sorry.
Only job is to make a call about how the finale is going to go by the end of this podcast.
Okay, final answer. Give me Wendell. Lock it in. Let's go. And I am happy to be wrong. I rejoice in being wrong. I'm fine with it. I'm okay with it. And I expect it to happen. But let's see how it plays out.
Right. As I said earlier in the podcast, the number one thing I want when I'm watching these shows is for the editors to just do it to me and make me feel like a total moron and that I got totally out-leveled by them. And I would love for the finale to be in line with that one way or another. And I really am looking forward to seeing how it plays out. I think there's, as we've gotten to, and as this, you know, these last several minutes have really reiterated, this is one of the closest calls entering a finale that I think Survivor has ever seen. So really looking forward to that. Dom, you are of course on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. I was going to bring up some breaking Australian Survivor news, but I am in no mood to talk about that right now. We can't end the podcast on that kind of negativity. So we'll talk about that soon. Actually, I guess you probably already talked about that with Adam, and I just haven't heard it yet.
I did, yeah. Nestled somewhere in there beneath the five other shows that I got to mention there. But as my final word before the finale, I will announce that I am changing my mind. Okay, in the past 25 seconds, I have convinced myself. Give me Dom 7-3 over Wendell. And if it is Wendell somehow, in fact, I do want a little bit of credit. Just a little bit, okay? I want a scintilla of credit to my name.
Okay, no credit will be given if Wendell ends up winning, because you had to change your mind with 25 seconds left. And now this is the Fency Fencerton, Taron Armstrong move of no matter what happens, I was right. And that is bullshit, and that is not accepted in this dojo. All right. So one of us has made a good finale call. The other one has gone back and forth. Anything else you, Dom, the second person mentioned there, want to get, or anything else you want to change your mind on that we've already established over the course of this podcast before things play out?
I'm good. I'm good to walk home with my tail between my legs.
All right. Sounds good. We will be back, I'm sure, very soon, talking through the finale. Once again, I know I just said it, but he's at DomHRV, at Colin Stone for me on Twitter, DomandColin@gmail.com if you want to get in touch with us. And again, Patreon.com/DomandColin if you want to stick with us for the off season and whatever season we end up covering during that span. Very much looking forward to all of that. We will talk to you guys very soon. Enjoy the finale Wednesday night. Take care, everybody.